Toad House.
Bug where it sometimes holds my mic open. I'm curious if that's a bug with clean feed and Chromium or something.
Hmm. Divine fucking intellect.
That's perfect.
Oh my god. Dude.
Blast from the past with that.
Man. So sad. Such a sad story.
It is a sad story. It is, man.
Breaks your heart.
Yeah.
I mean, because he was obviously gifted.
Oh.
But it was just that fucking whatever gene that granted him that, granted him a little extra.
So when did you first,
years ago.
Years ago.
I think it was about the same time for D and I. I think he was first. I think you showed him to me, maybe. But around the same time. Because I remember we were both really into it.
So was he still alive then?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I remember watching his streams, man.
Oh, really?
I think I caught one.
They would link him on,
the Chans.
Yeah, you know, they would link him on the Chan. Boys, he's up. They go, oh, hell.
The source of truth.
And for the most part, the stream, he would just be chilling, not doing much or programming. You're just kind of watching, waiting to see something insane happen.
It wasn't like Jerry Springer on the or anything. Like, it was mostly normal, and sometimes nothing happened.
It's just a man chilling there programming, or talking about code, or his operating system that he built. But then sometimes he would just break out into a rant, and it's like, oh, here we go. It's a Terry rant time.
Popcorn out. Yeah.
The dude was just, he was so fucking insane. God bless him. He was so insane. I don't know what happened to him. Part of me wonders if there was some crazy trauma that happened to him when he was younger, or if this is just all genetic and there was no escaping it.
I don't know.
I kind of lean more towards genetic, because I didn't do as much research as I wanted to, but I seem to remember him talking about his parents a lot.
Yeah.
And
loved his parents.
Oh yeah. No, he was the heart stuff I remember being heartbreaking was he would talk about him just like how much of a burden he felt.
Yeah.
Like he would just shit on himself. Like they don't deserve this. I'm worthless.
He would have those thoughts, and then in the same night, he would go cuss his dad out.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
He'd just be screaming at him in the living room. What is happening?
Extreme mental illness. It's like, y'all want to see mental illness? Here's the real kind, y'all. Everybody that wants to pretend and think it's trendy. I don't know.
Right.
Here you go.
And that's probably the best, like, what do you want to call it? The best, Terry A. Davis in a nutshell video you could possibly watch. And that's the one from Medicare. And it's talking about, how he, what he did early, what happened, and then where it ended. And actually, I think he made the video before Terry died. So obviously that part wasn't in the video, but and that was kind of Medicare's point, is like, all you people out there that want to get on social media and it's not bragging, glorify, but romanticize your a mental illness. It's like, this is what actual mental illness does to you. And I'm not saying you can't be kind of depressed or kind of, but I'm talking about people who get out there and they're like, oh no, I have schizophrenia, or I have debilitating OCD. And it's like, I don't know. If you did, I don't know. You might have a rough go of it.
Speaking of OCD, well, actually, just to catch everybody up, we're talking about Terry A. Davis tonight, and just about what he did and his life and stuff like that. But
and if you've never heard of him, don't feel bad. He's not famous necessarily.
No, he's pretty obscure.
But definitely look him up.
Yeah, it's a good story. Anyway, so I back when I was in radiology school, yeah. I had a friend who was in the class with me, and he had OCD, pretty bad, but it was just about, you know, certain things, you know, like you hear people say or tell stories about having OCD where they have to flip the light switch like two or three times before they leave a room.
Right.
Y'all heard stuff like that.
Yeah, of course.
So his manifested in some kind of bizarre ways, and I'm not trying to, you know, make fun of him or anything like that, but you know, it was strange to me at the time, and you know, I didn't really have a strong appreciation for it because I was young and I was just kind of stupid, you know, when it came to stuff like that.
Yeah.
But anyways, we had gone to New York City, me, him, and you know, it was like a double date type thing, you know. We both took our girls up to New York City.
And, wow.
It was like a 3-day adventure type thing, but we had gone to this bar club thing, and it was like down in the basement of another building, and I'll never forget, man, this lady, big lady, got up on stage and sang Total Eclipse of the Heart, and man, it was so good. So good. She could really sing, and I was drunk, so there's that.
Oh yeah, that she made plus modifier.
There's a modifier there, you know. But anyways, on the way back, we were walking, and I noticed.
Were you walking here?
I noticed he kept doing something. He kept going back to an alley and, you know, looking down the alley again. And then I would notice his girlfriend at the time, she would go back to the alley and look and then come back and tell him something.
Oh, God, she had to do it too.
She had to do it too. Yeah.
Oh, no.
And,
Wait. So she had to do it to help him? Like, his tick was both? Okay, okay. I didn't know if they were both, you know, they happened to have it, or if she was doing it to help him kind of deal.
No, she was doing it to help him. Yeah, sorry for that. I didn't mean to
it's fine.
Confuse y'all, but it was just, you know, for his, you know, he just had to be convinced that there wasn't a dead body back there. And he did that, you know, 6 or 7 times on our walk. And I mean, it wasn't a very long walk, but I just kept noticing it happening. And I had to ask him, which I shouldn't have, because that's, you know, I'm sure it was hard for him to say. But he said that he was checking for dead bodies. And he couldn't get it out of his head that, you know, there wasn't a dead body back there. So he had to check, you know, every single time. And, you know, after I'd asked him, you know, we had passed another alley, and we'd walked a little bit before he went back. So, you know, there was a longer period of time after we had passed an alley after I brought it up before he went back and checked it. So I knew then, that told me that he was thinking about it. And it just got to the point where he finally had to go back. I'm like, man, that's gotta be awful.
Oh, that's gotta be torture.
Yeah. I can't imagine, but anyways, OCD.
Yeah, no joke, sucks. Man. I mean,
no joke.
Those people, you see them. I can't remember what television show it was, but it's like this person. You know, they think they have to do everything 7 times, or their mom's gonna die.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Just for no reason, my mom's gonna die if I don't do this, and it's like, good Lord, could you imagine living with that stress? That sort of Damocles, you think you're everything you're doing is, you know, because you're saving your mother's life.
That's rough.
It's going to be hard on the old ticker. Mm-hmm. Big time.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely terrible, man.
But yeah, Terry though, his wasn't OCD. His was just straight up schizo schizophrenia. Yeah. He saw people.
I think he was bipolar too.
Yeah,
probably
bipolar. His diagnosis was bipolar, and then later schizophrenia. I don't know how much later.
She says he started out like in, I think it was 1996. I mean, obviously he was 48, so he's. Let's see, when was he born here? Let's look here.
69.
Hey, nice.
Nice.
You know, he grew up during the 70s as a teenager in the 80s, so he was you know, programming really early on, and he was in all the gifted classes, the I'm a smart motherfucker classes, and he kicked the shit out of it, and then he lived a program, and then he was, you know, struck with this fucking disease that just completely destroyed him.
And, I think it was, wasn't it around like 94, 96?
Yeah, late 90s. That's when it kind of onset. And then the early 2000s is whenever it really
kicked
apexed.
In. Yep.
I mean, eventually, yeah, and it was, you can't, for me, whenever I was watching, yes, I'm not going to say I didn't laugh my ass off at him. I'm not going to say he wasn't funny as hell. Oh, he was absolutely hysterical. If you realize what you're looking at, and you know, you can take it with a grain of salt that, you know, who you're listening to and hearing right now is not of sound mind and body at all.
Right.
So don't take it serious. This man is badly damaged because he says some awful things, very racist things, very, violent things. He says some awful things. So if you go look him up, be ready, because he's going to say some wild ass shit. So, you know, I don't recommend children be in the room if you get my drift.
But yeah, I wouldn't play it.
I wouldn't play it on full volume for everybody to hear. Maybe get you some headphones so you can cast.
I wouldn't play it at the bar mitzvah or the family reunion.
Right. But, I mean, the dude loved programming, and he loved just shit-talking people who didn't understand development, software development.
Oh, yeah. If you were... I know it happened, but I can't think off the top of my head of him like shitting on people that didn't claim to be a developer or whatever, you know? But if you said you were XYZ, or if you claimed to do something he knew how to do, a development specifically, man, yeah, he was shit on you.
He's coming down. He's gonna get you.
Yep.
You ever wrote an interrupt routine, fucker?
Yeah.
You ever read the fucking interrupt routine? I bet you haven't. I bet you don't even know what an interrupt routine is.
All right, Perry. Easy.
Yeah, just shitting all over him.
Oh, yeah. It's just dropping M-bombs like...
Oh, yeah.
Like he's throwing candy out of a car at a parade.
And that was something he valued highly. He said that's what made him free. He said, I can do this. I can say this word. That's why I'm free. And it's like, okay.
Wow.
Sure thing, guy, I guess.
It's a version. I mean, it's, yeah.
It's a version of freedom, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
You might get your ass beat.
Right. You're not free from consequences, like that age old saying. Right. Freedom of speech is not freedom from consequences.
Not at all. The consequences, justified or unjustified. It's like, well, that shouldn't result in murder. It's like, no, but it could. So you should think about that.
Yeah.
Would you rather be right or dead? I don't know. Your pick.
I read that he was raised up in a Catholic household.
Yeah.
And somewhere along the line, he was convinced that I don't want to say convinced, because it kind of is true that his brain or our brains are a computer.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's a fair assessment to make, but his train of thought on that was, if my brain is a computer, I have no need for a soul.
Hmm.
And so that's what led him to be an atheist. And he said he was an atheist for about for about 6 years, from like 1990, 1996. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of goes in line with what we were saying just a moment ago about when the onset of this first, you know, first come up, it was, you know, around 94, 96. And that's when he stopped being an atheist, because he had believed that God was talking to him. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess if you you were an atheist and then for whatever reason you thought God was talking to you, that would, like, if you believed it, like, deep in your soul that, you know,
right, true or not,
medical reason or otherwise, if you truly believe he's talking to you, he'd probably make you not be an atheist. Those things are kind of at odds with each other.
That's so sure. So, right. Shit.
You don't have a rational explanation for it. Well,
right.
But he also knew he was sick, yeah, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did, yeah. He was did. Aware.
I read a pretty good article that was written back in 2014 called God's Lonely Programmer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I found that article just now because I was looking for, I wanted to just remind myself of some stuff.
Yeah. It's good too. You know, it's empathetic, tries to be understanding of his predicament. It's a good read.
Have you seen the LinkedIn page that someone's kept going for him?
No.
Because it
no
says he's been debugging with Jesus from August 2018 till present for Almost Heaven Incorporated. Here, I'll link this to y'all. Well, I mean, you can find it easy enough.
No way.
You check our chat. Have a little look-see. Sir.
Oh, man.
I think that's pretty funny. If I was his family, I'd probably be offended, I guess, but I don't really see that as harming anything.
No, it's not. But the sad thing is, there ain't much family to speak of. I think he had a sister.
That's all that's left. Oh, all that's left. Okay. Mm-hmm, I was going to say, I think he grew up with like five. Yeah, like five siblings.
Okay, then he may have many more. All I remember him talking about was his sister.
So, well, he...
Oh, wait, no.
According to that article, he kind of wrote him off. Which
I think I know why. Yeah. But I ain't gonna say it here. It's awful. No, he had a sister, and he spoke highly of her as far as I recall. But I mean, the important people were his mother and his father.
Yeah.
And when his mother died, that was it for him, because I think she died early 2018, and he just...
I was going to say, she made it till the... I thought that she made it till the end, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, she died before he did. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, just not much. I meant not much before. That's what I meant. Like, to the end, right? Yeah. There's not much separating their death.
Yeah. Yeah, she died, and then he couldn't cope with it at all, and it led him to take his own life. And and then his father died, I think, less than a year after that.
Damn.
Can't really, what's he got to live for? Like, even problems with son or not, I mean, your son that's been with you and you've been taken care of, your wife dies, right? So that's right. A.
Love your life, your son, gone.
Right. And then your son, with all the problems and everything, he dies. It's like, well, and you're, what, late 80s, I think?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, they were very elderly.
You've lived a full life. I mean, you could keep going, obviously, see Betty White, but you've lived a pretty full life. So it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. And isn't that amazing how human will factors into that so hard?
Yeah. That's why they used to call it died of a broken heart. Like they didn't have the, like, there's been some studies into the psychological effects, and they're not conclusive, of course, because it gets kind of weird, a little bit pseudosciencey, and it's just hard to get data. But there's conjecture about how, like you're, you know, not, it's not, they quantify it differently. I can't think of the word right now. They don't call it willpower, but like how, you know, if you have something to live for example, or, you know, if you're just, you just don't want to die, you can fight off illnesses, like even cancer, they go into remission.
Yeah.
There's one reason why sometimes kids are able to fight off, you know, very terminal, like late stage, they think it's terminal cancer. I mean, sometimes kids get wrecked too, because, you know, they're young, but there are cases where it's like, doctors like, they're fucked. There is no way. And then the kid pushes it into remission. They're like, what the shit? So,
right.
mean, it plays a factor, and it could just, you know, for all we know, in 30 years, we'll find out it's some genetic thing. It's like, oh, okay, well, that's what happened. But oh, right. they don't have data for it now. It just seems like if you have something, quote unquote, to live for, which is kind of nebulous, but if you have willpower, you have something to live for. If you want to live, it helps. If you just want to die, if you're terminally ill and your family's dead or you hate yourself or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I'm sure y'all've heard of this anecdote about, you know, people working, you know, when they're in their twilight years, and then they quit work, and then shortly after they just fucking die.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
Dude, that shit bugs me. That shit right there bugs the crap out of me, because
Go ahead.
I just say I've worked with a handful of people, you know, old timers, you know, they work for a company, 45, been here 45 years. And it's like, hey, the first thought that hits my brain is fucking why? But the second part is, won't you go on? You ain't got many more years to clock, man. You need to check out of this stage and go chill. But it's just, I guess, you know, work is the meaning. And once they lose the meaning, then, you know, the body gives up.
For me personally, this is just me, right? I have not looked into this, but I can kind of in my own head rationalize that better than just will to live, because in general, when you're working, even if it's a desk job, like let's take the extremes on both ends. Let's take a desk job versus, I don't know, fucking welder, manual labor of some kind, carpenter. Sure. If you're getting old, even if you're just in your 60s, not talking about 80 years old, you're getting old. Especially if you have an active job, it makes you active. You move. You keep your blood flowing. You keep your metabolism up. Exercise is very important as you get older. Not lifting weights, not deadlifting 800 pounds, but just being active. And then you retire, and if you don't have something else to keep you active, like, I don't know, staying outside or gardening or going on vacation trips, and if you just sit at home and you're a dead ass, I mean, it makes sense to me. It follows that it could lead to a congenital problem you've been fighting off by being somewhat active your whole life. You stop moving, and your heart's just like, well, fuck you too, and you die. Like, again,
you know what? That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, this one, I can explain. The willpower one, no idea. I don't get it. But this
what
one,
about,
you know,
what about the desk job?
So, I'm sorry. Yeah, that one's harder, but I still think that maybe it plays into willpower a little bit, but to me there is a difference between having a job that you get up for and do stuff. Your mind's active too. You're doing something for X hours a day, even though, you know, people meme all the time, and me included. There's things I'd rather be doing. I'd love to play with my dog sometimes and not stare at a fucking screen. There's plenty of stuff I'd rather be doing, you know, from time to time, but I think having a job keeps you active, even if it's a desk job, keeps your mind active, and I don't know, it's... Even if you're going into an office, it's hard to rationalize this with work from home, but I would counter that argument with we don't have enough data yet, because work from home is still relatively new. I don't even just mean COVID work from home. I just mean work from home in general.
Remote work, period.
It's still relatively new as far at a wide scale, and maybe we'll see this change. Like, who knows? Maybe this won't be as big of a thing. But even if your desk job, you're going into the office, you are still commuting, you're still walking around, you're doing something. There is, like, if you look at some of the data they give, not the FDA, fucking the Cancer Society, American Cancer Society, or whoever, if you look at some of the stuff they tell older people to do, it's not that much. Like, it's like, hey, go outside in the sunshine for 5 minutes, or walk your dog in your home, they really don't ask for much. And they're like, there's data to show that even that little bit helps. You don't have to do a lot. I mean, the more you do, the better, I guess. I don't think a doctor would tell you to not go walk for longer, but it doesn't really take a lot. And so, again, just me personally, even if you have a desk job, I can kind of see the act of you getting up, you're commuting, you're driving, you're walking around in the office. Right. Maybe you walk to lunch. Maybe you
do
something.
Blood's moving. Keeping that blood moving.
It is different from just sitting on your ass for 14 hours and then going back to bed. But to your point, I mean, we could see a switch in this, because I don't know how to rationalize, like, if we're talking just work from home, how is that different other than the willpower aspect? Maybe that's where that plays in. Your mind is still mentally active and you're doing something.
I think it's purpose. I think it's a sense of purpose.
Yeah.
Purpose is important.
But why? So I agree with you, but that's where I get fuzzy again, right? I can't rationalize that. I do agree. But it's just, I don't know the why, you know.
Oh, what? Man, that's a philosophical question. You're not going to be able to throw metrics at it and figure it out. I mean, why is purpose important? I don't know. It just, that's how people, it's one of those things, you know it, but it doesn't have to be proven to you. It's just, we all know it. We know the people who, when they lose purpose, it's bad. It's like losing blood pressure. It's bad. When people have purpose, they're driven, or they're at least productive. But you know, can we quantify it? Can we throw, you know, can we put it in a spreadsheet and really get down into the data? No, it's not going to work because it's so highly subjective that it's impossible to quantify, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm not, just because we can't quantify it. I'm not saying it's not real. I'm just saying I don't have an answer for it. I would like one. I think it'd be cool. But I just don't have one.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, I'll never get an answer to that one. Never get an answer to that one.
What's the meaning of life? I mean, maybe it's a...
that's really it.
Maybe it's... I mean, because I think, you know, looking at that, to take a... What am I trying to say here? To borrow a little bit from that book. You know, what's the purpose of life, meaning, and the something of everything? I don't know. What's the actual question they asked? Oh, Hitchhiker's Guide.
Hitchhiker's Guide?
Yeah, what was the question they asked?
They asked what the meaning of life was, and the machine said 42.
Right, but see, that was the thing. It's like your question's wrong, and I think that's what he was getting at.
Oh, I don't know what they modified. I thought you meant the question when they built the machine. They asked, you know, what's the meaning of life?
Right.
I don't know.
What's the meaning of life, purpose of everything, or something like that? It felt like it was a little longer, but it was just that it gave back the answer of 42. Was a clear indication that your question was stupid. And yeah, you may want to know that, but it's still the wrong question. And, you know, that might be what we're doing here. It's like, why does purpose, you know, extend your life? Or why is it that people without purpose tend to have a rougher go of it than people who find a purpose? And it's like, I don't know, maybe that's the wrong question.
You know, maybe that's what kept, to pull it back into what we were talking about originally, maybe that's what kept Terry going, because he
created a purpose.
He created a purpose.
He created Temple OS, his own operating system to talk to God through a random word generator, 640 by 480, the covenant shall not be broken.
Non-preemptive, multitasking.
Right, right. And it even has nice little graphics, and you can play hymns to God.
Oh, I also remember, I don't remember what the actual quote was. God said 640 by 480, 16 color was a cover, right? Like circumcision.
yeah, 16 color.
Yeah. Yeah. 16-bit color is a covenant.
I love how I can't find any quotes about it yet, but I do remember him being real big on it not being networked at all. There was no networking stack, period.
No network, no graphics.
No, there were graphics, but
it was bitmap. It was bitmap graphics.
It was all running off of the CPU. He wasn't using any kind of graphics card core.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, he did all that.
2.1 megabytes. Sorry.
The whole operating system was?
Yeah.
God.
2.1 megabytes. Can you believe that?
No.
I'm actually surprised by that, not because of like, the code, because it's, you know, assembly is small, but just because there was like basic bitmaps and stuff that he used. Maybe the quote, I'm not saying you're wrong or misquoting it, but maybe that what they mean is this 2.1 megabytes of quote unquote code. That doesn't count assets, right? That doesn't count.
Sure.
Like,
that's true. And then that was taken. He may have been just talking about purely the OS, and that was It was around 100,000 lines of code. This is coming from his video, one of his streams, and it was two. He was saying 2.1 megabytes. So you're probably right about that.
Yeah, but still, I mean, I'm not diminishing it. That's still insanely slimmed. Like it's fucking nuts.
Oh yeah,
I do love what he named the random number or random word generator. He called it the Oracle.
The Oracle.
Because that's how God talked. He spoke through the Oracle.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, oh. Man. He had a fucking like mesh editor, 3D mesh editor, all this flight simulator.
He also made stuff like, I mean, he did the Ticketmaster backend. I think D touched on that last week, but
yeah.
Actually, I don't know if that's on the podcast y'all heard. I don't know if we had cut by then. But anyways, he did work at Curious. I don't know. I assume he got some kind of fuck you money. I'm not saying he's a billionaire, but I'm, you know, allegedly, single-handedly, if you believe him and other accounts, wrote the back end for Ticketmaster when they were, you know, the dot-com bubble was happening and things were just getting off the ground. So I'm sure he got decently paid for it. And
that was for the Vax. He wrote it on the Vax mainframe, 1996.
Yeah, his fake LinkedIn shows that he was employed there for, I think, 5 or 6 years, which I believe it. I think what I was trying to say, though, he also, he did write other tools, I'm pretty sure. Like, he did other stuff on the side. Like, Temple OS was his thing. That was his project from the ground up. And, I mean, if anyone is listening and you are, you know, if you understand how much of an achievement that is or if you don't, I think it's really important to not undersell what that means, because I'm not being elitist. First off, even if you take, like, we'll use Linux as an example, even if you take and make your own Linux distribution by taking a copy of and changing Debian, a popular distro, even if you do that and you put your own spin on it, I'm not diminishing the work, because you could do a lot doing that. That's how a lot of Linux distributions are born. It's how Ubuntu came around. It's a very popular one. They forked Debian and they did a lot of shit to it. But you're still starting with a base, and I'm simplifying it, so, you know, fuck off if you're, oh, it's not how it works. Okay, yeah. But
no, you still got a foundation to build on.
Right. And this guy didn't. He did not build off anything. Mm-mm. So all the stuff that you take for granted when you start with a base, I mean, it's like with development and programming, it's like the difference between using something with a lot of libraries, like, I'll say Python, because I understand it myself. You know, you can still... Python can still be very complex, and you can do a lot of powerful shit with it, but you have all these libraries at your fingertips that can make your job so much easier. You don't have to reinvent the wheel if you don't want to. Whereas if you're writing, you know, MASM assembly, like, you gotta fucking do... Well, that's a bad example. MASM has functions too, but you get my point. You still have to do fucking everything on your own, almost.
Every single operation. You gotta consider it. You gotta account for it. You gotta error check it. On and on and on and on, and it is a massive undertaking. Only a madman would do it.
as Terry would say, you're not a trailblazer if you're following someone's trail.
I mean,
he definitely burned his own one.
Oh yeah, that was his thing about Linux. He was shitting on all the distros. Or, you know, all the variations of Linux. You're building on a foundation,
right?
Not building from the ground up like he did.
Yeah, and you know, I don't agree with that. Obviously, that's a very reductionist point of view. But he was a strong personality, like we said. So you know, he's
he was absolutely tenacious. He built his own. He actually started. He was messing around with 3D printer kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Back in 96, like 3-axis stepper motor driven milling machine, right?
I've never heard that. So he was making, because I mean, CNC was a thing back then. So he was making like a portable, not portable, maybe, but a,
yeah, like a smaller small CNC version. Yeah. Yeah.
Was he using control. Plastic filament? Like,
no, wood. Now? He hooked a Dremel up to it and he was working on wood.
Wow. Is there pictures of anything he made?
There's a picture of him next to it.
Oh, really? I read the part about him you know, creating this machine, but and about him almost burning his apartment down. Oh shit! Yeah, yeah. There you go. Yeah, he was onto something there. He was like, "Oh, 3D printing. That's gonna be the next big thing."
Yeah. I mean, there's stepper motors. There's belts. He's got. I mean,
looks very similar to a 3D printer.
It does. Yes. Like, yeah, for sure.
So I mean, he had ideas that weren't stupid.
No.
And you would never imagine that it came from an absolutely psycho person.
Well, I was going to, you know, I don't want to, it's a deeper topic. I don't know that it's worth going into because none of us are trained psychologists or psychiatrists, but it is interesting to me how it's like a, you know, there's no biological free lunch. Like I say that every other week, favorite saying of mine, because it's true, but it's kind of interesting to me how, it seems like at least the more hyper-focused or hyper-gifted you are in a single area, like if you're like the smartest physicist ever, like, or the smartest, even, you know, I don't know, maybe you're even the best welder ever. It doesn't even have to be, let's take away the academia aspect. Like, right. You are somehow, you can weld fucking anything. You are
God's gift to welding.
Yeah, you are suffering in some other area. You're either a fucking chode that no one likes. You are also mentally ill in some way.
Shout out, Chode House.
You have something wrong with you, right? It's like a balancing thing, specifically with academia. You. Yeah, exactly. It seems like with academia specifically, generally manifests as a mental illness or a complete lack of social skills or both. And you know, some of that is environment, sure, and maybe that person's hyper intelligent because their parents were also hyper intelligent, and maybe their parents weren't very socially, you know, adept. But I do think there is like a, you know, to have your mind work in a certain way, for whatever reason, through like the chemistry bath that goes on in there, to have it work in a certain way that makes you super smart, maybe the way that a quote unquote normal person's works, you know, that lets them be more balanced, you're missing that enzyme or your protein level is too low for that. So it's, I guess what I'm trying to say is you don't get both. And I'm sure there are. You know, and I'm not saying if you're a genius, you're a dick. There are people that are very smart and do have social skills. If you listen to them talk, I would say they frequently say they have to work at them, and sometimes it doesn't come easily. Right. But it's not like you can't be like, oh, you know, if you're smart, you're a dick, or if you're dumb, you're the nicest person ever. That's not true at all. But it is interesting how that works. It's just it's like you have a, like a skill set, like a character creation in a game. It's like you got 30 skill points. And you dumped them all in intellect. Your charisma is fucking -5.
Right. They punish you further every time you interact with somebody. Just hit you like with a -10 debuff just because you had to talk to a person.
Yep. Yeah, 30 intellect and, you know, 5 in strength.
Right.
Fall out of bed in the morning, drag your ass over to the computer. It's just, it is pitiful.
And then write symphonies.
Yeah. And then write, see, that's the thing about the brain. We don't get it, man, because there's so many anomalous people who have just come out of the woodwork who, like, there's even one who, like, you know, he hit his head or something, and then he, you know, now he can play the piano. Never played the piano in his life. Bonked his head. Now I can play the piano.
That's crazy. Perfect.
It's like, what? Wait. And that makes my eyebrow go up. Like, you know what? I think I would have to be there and know this person to actually believe this story.
Yeah. But, I don't. Some of those, I was going to say that. I'm glad you did. Because I'm not saying it. There are cases, enough cases to back up what you're saying of, like, you know, you're super, there's the unfortunate case, like a super adept violinist has brain surgery, for example, and they can no longer play. Or they're playing severely diminished.
Yeah. Oh, you can lose. That. It's easy to destroy all of this. I mean, losing it happens all the time.
Yeah.
It's gaining it.
Yeah.
Just very acutely is what's strange. Like, I've heard other people, I've heard stories about people, they can speak in other languages if they're sleepwalking. Weird. Just weird shit. It's like, what? How? And I, you know, once again, eyebrow goes up. I don't know about that.
I mean, did you hear that off the chans?
No, probably off mainstream media, because that's where I've heard it before, too. Not even making a joke,
It was a magazine I seen that while I was checking out getting groceries called Sun.
Yes, I hear that's a great publication. No, I have the same. I've always had
Fat Boy Lives.
Right. It's like
Fat Boy.
I can kind of. It's hard to believe any of it of gaining it, even if you're already doing. If you're already speak Spanish at an intermediate level, it's still hard for me to wrap my head around. If you hit your head, now you're a native speaker.
Right.
But that's slightly more believable than the stories I've heard, like you have. It's like, this man only knew how to speak English, and he hit his head, and now can speak Cantonese and Japanese. It's like,
right.
Now,
it's like,
can he, though?
It's like, that makes no sense.
Right.
Right.
It's like those utterances, the phonetics, you know, did he ever hear them before?
Right. Well, exactly, because you're not just born with it. Or that's not how that works.
Unless we're implying like literal genetic memory. Some great, 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 great grandfather or grandmother was Cantonese.
No, it's just clickbait.
Slipped one in there.
it's an old clickbait too. It's from the magazines you're talking about, and like the tabloids and magazines from 30, 40, 50 years ago even. Like it's just clickbait. It's fantastical because people want to believe it.
Here's what we do know. Here's what is true. There are people who are, you know, they can't tie their shoelaces, but they can play piano and violin and do these things that are extraordinary to a virtuoso level. But like I said, can't tie their shoes, can't talk to a person, can't cook breakfast for themselves or something like that. Yeah. But they can do this other thing. It's like, what the fuck is that? What is that? What is happening in their brain that lets them? What is happening in their brain that lets them develop an operating system from the ground up in just a couple of years? But you know, he can't go outside without screaming at people starting a fight.
I think some of it. I can speak a little bit on a personal level to like the music thing. I think for some of those people like that are really gifted, but they're, you know, they're mentally challenged. Like they, you know, literally are quote unquote retarded with their IQ level, even though they're a virtuoso. Like an IQ test would say they're not, they're like barely functioning.
Right. IQ 68. Right.
Some of those, you know, if you actually look into their life and you know, again, you can't know, you're not omnipotent, but if you go up what the parents say, that they've, you know, they're 2 years old and they start playing the piano and love it. And they don't start out at a virtuoso at two, but they pick it up quickly and keep going. So it is still something unlocking in their brain, but it's not like, to use the example of languages, it's not like they wake up when they're 30 and they start playing things perfectly. They practice still and they obsess over it. Like the way their mind works, all they do is that one thing. That's all they can do, or that's all they choose to do, or both. There are other instances with music where, like, I have a half sister who's Down syndrome, and a lot of stuff wrong with her, but she is able to mimic people on a piano. And it's, when I say mimic, because she doesn't really practice, or I don't know. Last time I knew what she was doing, she didn't practice. It wasn't something she was super interested in. She just liked listening. But she would listen to family members come over and, like, I don't know, maybe they're average at the piano or whatever. They play something. And she would just watch them play. And then she would, like, laugh and go to the piano and play it back.
Huh.
And it's, to me, that's not necessarily that she's the savant. Because, again, she's not composing things on her own. And she's not playing it all the time. But there is something in her head that lets her hear something for whatever reason. And watch their hands. Yeah. And she can just repeat it.
Yeah. So, what the fuck is that?
I don't know, man.
And why aren't we studying this? Because, man, if you could unlock that.
Oh, they, yeah. Well, no, hold on. They are. They are studying it. They just don't know what the fuck they're doing. They're trying, believe me. Yeah. They're fucking giving her trying.
Hell. They're giving her hell. They're getting nowhere.
And I often wonder if everybody has some sort of gift that way, right? And all it takes is some kind of exposure to that to, you know, flip that switch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know. I'm pretty old. I still haven't found mine.
Right.
No,
I mean, have you ever been like ice climbing?
I have not.
Maybe you have some unlocked potential there and you just haven't been exposed to it. Who knows?
And a lot of that is other people seeing it and recognize it and going, hey, wait a minute, have you ever tried? You know.
Yeah. Right. I was about to say that it's also doubt or not recognizing that you do have something special. Like there's things that you do, because it really is, it can be difficult to recognize that something you're doing is actually very difficult until someone else points it out and you take a step back and look at it and you're like, oh, no, that's not difficult at all. And then, you know, 30 other people are like, I beg to differ. That is, I cannot do that. That is very difficult. And you're like, oh, yeah. Okay, well, I guess it is. So I think that exists for everyone, truly. It's just, it depends on, and it's not, life isn't fair. I'm not saying everyone can be a genius if they just eat their Wheaties. But I do think everyone does have something that to them is nothing, but to someone else would be like, oh, well, that's kind of fucking, I can't do that well, or that's kind of fucking cool, or, you know, who knows. And like you said, Ethan, it takes exposure to it. Like, it's just... Like for me with music and drumming, like I there's all those, you know, the classic like videos. So many home movies of me 2 years old banging on pots and pans and like a drum set in my kitchen and not knowing what I'm doing. I'm not some 2 year old drumming savant, but just loving it and hitting shit. And then I get a drum set for when I'm like 11 or 12 and I just start playing it. And I remember that feeling of playing it. And yeah, I was happy and I was having a lot of fun. But just feeling like, holy shit, this just fucking makes sense. all of this just fucking makes sense. This is awesome. Why doesn't everyone do this?
Right.
And I think that's you know what you're saying. You have to, something has to happen to put you in that situation, and then you realize, oh, I'm, you know, I can do this thing.
Yeah, I've never had that.
I haven't found one yet. Not yet.
And jokes aside, you may not have. Consciously, maybe you haven't had something with that conscious revelation, but again, if you could somehow take an inventory of it, and if people would, you know, you sit down with 100 strangers and talk about shit, there would be something that you do.
Oh, I'm not saying I'm not good at something. I just don't think I'm extraordinary at anything. It's like,
oh, man. You know,
I'm great at a lot of, I'm good at a lot of things. I'm good at a lot of things, but I'm not.
Well, it depends on how you're. Unbelievable. How are you comparing yourself, right? Like, if you always. Because I do the same thing, too. Like,
let's skip this.
No. We don't have to use ourselves for examples. I'm just saying, like, it is a trap to compare. You only compare yourself against the absolute elite, right? And sure, like pretend like you're, like, working out or whatever. You're like, yeah, I got my bench press to 145 or 135. This is awesome. And then you fucking go on Instagram and you see Ndamukong Suh for the fucking Detroit Lions bench pressing 500 pounds with one hand. And you're like,
did that happen?
No, but I'm being high part. Like you see like an NFL player benching, you know, without effort.
Unreal
four times.
Way. Yeah.
Right. And just throwing it around like it's nothing.
He's a genetic freak.
Yeah. But does that mean that you're not doing something good and you're not doing well and still better than average and doing no, it doesn't, but if you only ever compare yourself to the millionth of a percent of the elite, you're always going to think you're shit. You have to try and take a step back and be like, yeah, I'm never going to be that guy, because and you have to be honest too, it's not just genetics, you're not putting in the time, you're not doing what some of these people are doing
to obsess
over it, and you know you're not single-mindedly.
Why? Because I don't care.
Yeah, sure.
I just don't care that much.
Or, yeah, there's nothing wrong with it, but that is something else, I think, that people get mad that they're not good at something, or they get frustrated, and they, you know, some people use the, oh, it's just genetics as an excuse. And yeah, sure, especially with physical activity, that can play a role, but you don't see the hours and hours of failure and practice and just devotion to this one thing that this person's doing. You don't see that. You see the end result after they've done it for thousands and thousands and thousands of hours, and you get ass mad because you can't do it. It's like, well, if you had put in the 20,000 hours learning guitar that this guy did, maybe you could fucking do what he did. Mm-hmm. So practice, practice matters 100%.
Yeah. And that's something I never thought of that you brought up. It's like, no, they started when they were two. And it wasn't because anybody made them. It's because they just really, really, really liked it. And they liked it a whole lot. And they've been doing it every day for 6 hours since they were 2. And now they're 12. And yeah, they can play, you know, Chopin now. But they've already got 20,000 hours banked up in the practice vat. So that makes perfect sense.
Absolutely, perfect sense. It's a big deal. And it's not just in that case, it's not just practicing, right? It's how you practice, and it's just being devoted to it. And I think to loop it back to our actual topic at hand, I think Terry found something, you know, he found development. He liked it. He's like, because he talks about
control,
in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that interview you were talking about, Ethan, I had it up on my screen.
God's Lonely Programmer.
Yeah, so yeah. There's quotes in there about, he's like, I was in middle school and I was doing this thing on the Commodore and I had so much fun. I loved the feeling of power or control or whatever. Mm-hmm. He found his thing, yeah. And then he just obsessively, think of the thousands and thousands of hours that man spent writing stuff for Ticketmaster or himself or developing Temple OS. Right. It's like, yeah, that was his focus. That's all he fucking did. That was it.
Mm.
So it's, you know.
It's kind of sobering right here. It's like, what the fuck am I doing?
Well, I mean.
Why ain't I working on anything? I need to be getting at something.
I mean, that's what hobbies are. I would argue, yeah, so it depends on what your goal is, right? If you, there is the harsh reality of life. If you truly want to be great, and we're like defining great as what the guys we're talking about, guys and gals that are in the elite, then mm-hmm. that has to be your sole focus.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can't do anything
everything.
Else. Right. You can't play games at night after work. Hell, you
I
probably
just
can't
don't
even
have
work.
That. I just don't have that
in
okay.
me to care. That's okay. You don't have it, but I'm just, you can't have the other thing too. Like, it's okay to not do it, and that's fine. It's, doesn't matter.
You know, Terry loved playing drums too.
I didn't actually know that. No,
did you know that?
I did not. No,
he
no,
loved,
I did not.
He couldn't play them.
But it was like a hobby, I guess.
It was, well, it's like me playing drums, right? He just loved banging on shit and being loud because, like, he would do videos and streams, and he would take songs, and he would, you know, bang on his desk along with it and sing. And then somebody finally on the somebody, you know, they figured out where he lived, and they put the money together and they sent him a mini drum set. And I say mini, like it's probably
a bongos.
Well, it's like 2 feet wide. I mean, it took up a very small amount of space.
Oh,
tiny, tiny,
okay.
tiny.
Yeah.
But man,
he
fucked that thing up. He would be streaming and just beating the hell out of it.
That's giving awesome, her. Man. That's awesome.
It drove his parents insane with it. They would come in. They'd be like, can you please, you got to stop. Because it had cymbals and everything.
Wow.
He'd be laying into that crash, boy. Funny, funny, funny. It was a hoot watching him.
I didn't know anything about Terry A. Davis before you brought him up last week.
Oh, yeah.
And like Snow said, I think it was after we had stopped recording and you brought him up, but I've been watching videos and stuff this past week, you know, just trying to in the beginning it was just, oh, okay, you know, I'll look him up to do research for the podcast. But then I was like, man, you know, the story this guy has is really, it's really interesting. And mm-hmm. it's sad too, that such a mind would be so tormented like he was.
The other thing he created accidentally was anytime you're on another forum, any forum, and someone accuses someone else of glowing. Well, he invented that.
Oh, really?
Know? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Nice.
Especially if you think they're with law enforcement of any sort, and this is some sort of honeypot, and they're, you know, that's a law enforcement person posting on this forum. Yeah, you call that a glow post. You just like respond like, this post glows like hell. And a lot of people say that, and they don't know why they're saying it. They don't know it came from Terry A. Davis. They just think it's because we say that law enforcement glows. It's like, well, they do and they don't. It depends on if you're Terry A. Davis or not. Right. But yeah, that's where the term glow posting came from. Old Terry. Bless his heart, that poor bastard.
Well, to kind of to wrap us up, I wanted to play a video, so everybody can hear it. This is the last video that Terry A. Davis had recorded, and I think that it certainly shed some light on, you know, the mental illness and you know, what he was going through, and, you know, just his, and I mean, you can certainly pick up on his temperament, you know, during his last days. But this comes from, and, you know, I hope they don't chase me down and tell me to take this episode down or anything, but this comes from the Terry Davis YouTube channel. It's the only video on there, but I'll play that now.
Well, I'm King Terry, and learned how to purify myself in a horribly impure environment. It's pretty rough living homeless and in a field outside a little town, and coming into their library, and it's a very pure town, and must have been an extreme shock to them to see such a horribly sick person come in here and pollute everything. And it was a lot of torture to snap me into an ability to handle purity for this job. There's a little castle over there. Let me see, where's that castle? There it is. Oh no. So, that's a little castle. I don't know. I really like this library. So, come here and use their computer and smoke out here. They must have been freaking out because such an impure person was in their presence. Oh well, I was clueless. Now I used to have a respect for purity. So, it's good to be king. Wait, maybe. I think maybe I'm just like a little bizarre little person who walks back and forth. Whatever, you know. But
that is his, the way he talks, man. It's just it's like it's almost kind of normal. Like, it's not super normal, but it's not super, to me at least. I mean, obviously there's some weirdness, but it's not like super out there. It's not like every other word.
Yeah. There's a tinge of abnormality to it. It's just enough to make you think, there's something, like the you know, some of the thought processes and just the way he says, the way he speaks, you know, period.
Yeah. You can tell the intelligence is there.
Right.
But something's off. I want to read something he said, if I may.
Because
it's hilarious. It's hilarious, and it's just you don't see it coming. But here goes. He says, what's reality? I don't know. When my bird was looking at my computer monitor, I thought, that bird has no idea what he's looking at. And yet, what does the bird do? Does he panic? No. He can't really panic. He just does the best he can. Is he able to live in a world where he's so ignorant? Well, he doesn't really have a choice. The bird is okay, even though he doesn't understand the world. You're that bird looking at the monitor, and you're thinking to yourself, I can figure this out. Maybe you have some bird ideas. Maybe that's the best you can do.
Wow. I'm glad you chose that one. I didn't know what you were going to choose, and as you started reading, I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember.
I got bird ideas, man.
I liked that.
Maybe you have some bird ideas.
It's kind of a silly, I guess you could think of it as silly too, but it's kind of an interesting way to think about it, and it does make sense.
Yeah, I mean, it does. It does make sense. Crazy though it may sound.
Well, listeners, thank you for listening, and we hope that you listen again next week. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. I post on YouTube, Stitcher. You know, just about anywhere. But all right, have a good night, guys.
Later.
Peace.